Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Joe Ostrowski, Knights on 670 The Score.
As you know, the Bears had the second fewest offensive yards per play last year, making all sorts of changes among the coaches. Mitch Trubisky not going anywhere. Bears made sure to announce that. So I want to bring in someone from Cincinnati to talk about the new OC of the Bears, Bill Lazor. And we bring in the afternoon man at ESPN 1530. Sometimes you hear him on the big one, 700 WLW. His name is Mo Egger. What's going on, Mo?
Joe, what's happening? How you doing?
Doing well, man. Back when I used to listen to 1530 on a regular basis, I lived in Cincinnati for about a half year. It was the Homer.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, man, it was. It was another lifetime and another girlfriend ago. But I wanted to reach out to you about this Bill Lazor move. The last time he was employed by an NFL team, it was with your Cincinnati Bengals, spent 3 years there. For the audience, he was the quarterback's coach for one season and the OC for 2 years, and he was fired a year ago. So how would you characterize his time with the Bengals?
You know, it's funny, the 2 years should almost be kind of considered mutually exclusive from one another, because the first year he was the offensive coordinator, he became the offensive coordinator after their second game. You know, their first two games, they played very poorly. Ken Zampezi was the offensive coordinator. He had taken over for Hugh Jackson. He was the OC in 2016. He was the offensive coordinator for the first two games of the 2017 season, and those two games were a disaster, certainly offensively. They didn't score an offensive touchdown. And the second of those two games was a primetime game on a Thursday night, and A.J. Green, after the game, basically threw the offensive coordinator under the bus publicly. And I remember at the time thinking, there's no way Ken Zampezi survives that, because A.J. Green doesn't do that kind of thing. So Bill Lazor became the offensive coordinator. They were running Ken Zampezi's offense. The results were not good. It was not a very good Bengals season. They finished 7-9. They had to win their final two games. Bears fans might remember they played the Bears late in the season, and Chicago just absolutely trounced them. They brought back Bill Lazor as the offensive coordinator in a full-time capacity the following year. They had a chance to install his offense. They went through the entire, you know, offseason and training camp, you know, sort of reintroducing a new offense in Bill Lazor's image. And, you know, it might be hard for some people to remember, but at the beginning of the 2018 season, the Bengals were pretty good. You know, they started 4-1. They won a shootout of a game against the Falcons in Atlanta. And it kind of felt like Bill Lazor had done a really nice job of designing an offense around Andy Dalton's strengths. He looked more comfortable in the offense. And most importantly, he had a fully healthy group of pass catchers. He had Tyler Eifert, A.J. Green, Joe Mixon, and Tyler Boyd. And that year, Tyler Boyd and A.J. Green both had 1,000-yard seasons. The offensive line wasn't very good, but, you know, that was a year that ended with Marvin Lewis losing his job. But for about 10 minutes, we were flirting with the idea that the Bengals were going to go back to the playoffs, and it wasn't because of that defense, which was the worst in the league. It was because of how good they were offensively. Now, how much of that goes to Bill Lazor, how much of that goes to the skill guys they have, you know, that's probably for somebody smarter than me to really give you an in-depth answer to. But it wasn't like we thought, man, the Bengals are winning in spite of their offensive coordinator, or this guy has no idea what he's doing, or what they're doing is solely a result of the talent that they have. Because if that was the case, Ken Zampezi still would have been the offensive coordinator. So there is some limited track record of success. As that season went on, they started to suffer a series of injuries. A.J. Green got hurt. Tyler Boyd got hurt. Andy Dalton himself got hurt, didn't play the final six games of the season. You know, Joe Mixon led the AFC in rushing yards, which wasn't insignificant given how, you know, battered that offense was and how bad that offensive line was. Again, how much of that is on Bill Lazor, I don't know. But it's not like there haven't been successes with him as an NFL offensive coordinator. For those first, you know, five or six games at the beginning of last year, the Bengals were pretty good on offense. And Andy Dalton, I can tell you this, say what you want about Andy Dalton's limitations as a player, he seemed to really like playing for Bill Lazor. He seemed to really like playing for a coordinator that designed the offense in around what Andy was comfortable doing. Hugh Jackson didn't do that. It was basically, here's the offense, go run it. Ken Zampese certainly didn't do that. It was, here's the offense, go run it. I'm not even sure what you could say about Zach Taylor's offense this past season. It felt to me like Bill Lazor enabled Andy Dalton to achieve a certain comfort level that, you know, it wasn't sustainable, but for a brief amount of time, it did work.
And well, what you said right there that really stood out to me is that when Bill Lazor was in Cincinnati, he was building around Andy Dalton's strengths. And that's something that Matt Nagy in year two was criticized for again and again, just the play calling, lack of a run game, not getting Trubisky on the run, not using his legs to get some first downs here. And it sounds to me that's something that they definitely need in the room as the Bears are making changes with this offensive staff. The first year as the OC for Lazor actually intrigues me a little bit more because DeFilippo's brought in to be the quarterback's coach, another guy with play-calling experience. Of course, Lazor has it as well. Many were calling for Nagy to give up the play-calling duties and just be the CEO, be the head coach. I'm wondering how Lazor would do in a situation where maybe he would take over mid-season like Nagy took over in his last year with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, the Bengals themselves made a huge deal out of luck. When Bill Lazor took over as the offensive coordinator after two games, hey, this isn't his offense. And I remember at the time going, well, okay, then it's not his offense. And I know it's more difficult and more complex than that, but I'm going, oh, okay, well, if you have a playbook that you make doesn't work, blow up the playbook. And to me, that kind of spoke to the weaknesses they had. Coaching position, certainly organizationally. I thought the main difference between what they were in 2017 and what they were in 2018, first of all, they drafted Joe Mixon in 2017, and it was a controversial pick because of, you know, what he had been involved in off the field at Oklahoma. And they were almost reluctant to use him. You know, the first game that Joe Mixon played, he was the third running back. They gave a series to Jeremy Hill. Then they gave another entire series to Giovanni Bernard before putting Joe Mixon in the game. And I don't know how much of that was Marvin Lewis. I don't know how much of that was Ken Zambezi. But the main difference between the offense that Bill Lazor installed and the one that he was running when he took over as head coach during the season was they decided Joe Mixon was going to be the guy. And not only was going to be the guy running the football, but they were going to be a little bit more creative in terms of how they got the ball to him. They were going to throw him the ball a little bit more. The one thing that did always perplex me in both seasons was why they seemed almost allergic to the idea that you could put both Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard, their top two running backs, on the field at the exact same time. That never really made a lot of sense to me. But again, when he had a chance to install his own system, you know, at the beginning of the year, he did okay. They did a nice job. I think the other thing you also have to remember about the year that Lazor took over after two games, the team had just gone through an offseason where they lost their best two linemen. They let Andrew Whitworth get away in free agency to the L.A. Rams. And Kevin Zeitler left to go play for the Cleveland Browns. Up until that point, you know, for years they had had a pretty good offensive line. In 2017, just because of attrition, because of some draft picks never really panning out, I'm not really sure that anybody would have been able to achieve great results with that offense because of the offensive line. It certainly wasn't that much of a strength the following season, but it was better. And I think you have to take that into account when you look at that 2017 team, you know, the attrition they had suffered the previous offseason on the O-line.
This is Joe Ostrowski on Sports Radio 670. The Score, we're with Mo Egger of ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. And it sounds, Mo, like the Bears are actually going to bring some sort of quarterback competition into the room for Mitch Trubisky. People have been floating out. What about Cam? Or maybe you can get Foles. And, of course, Andy Dalton. A lot of people saying, hey, you should bring Andy Dalton here. What sort of situation do you think Dalton's looking for now?
I think he's looking for a place where he can go to the playoffs and win a playoff game and compete for a championship. First of all, it's not up to Andy Dalton right now. The Bengals have him under contract for one more year. Now they can walk away from that and basically not have to pay him anything. And so, there's a lot of scenarios at play here. Maybe the Bengals trade him. I think they'll try. Maybe they have him go through the off season. They bring him to training camp, and they wait for a team to, suffer something catastrophic at quarterback where they're desperate and they want to pay a lot for a starting caliber guy like Minnesota when Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, that kind of thing. They could also let him walk early in the off season, let him be a free agent, and let him go play. He has said emphatically he believes he should be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He was not shy in his disagreement with the three-game benching that the team decided on back in November. He believes, and look, he's been a starting quarterback in this league for almost 9 full seasons. He's not wrong, but he is going to look for a place where he has got a chance to be the starting quarterback. I doubt he... in fact, I know he has little interest in going to a place where they're going to say, all right, you're going to be the backup, but the starting quarterback is kind of in on shaky ground, so you might play. He thinks he should be a starting caliber quarterback. He has been a starting caliber quarterback. The question I guess I would have is, if it was up to him, how many teams are an Andy Dalton away from being really, really good? You might bring him in because you want him to mentor the young guy you have, or, you're not totally sold on the guy you have right now, and he would be a decent plan B. I'm not sure that what he's looking for is what he is going to find. A team that's got a chance to be really good, that has an opening for a starting quarterback, that's going to want Andy Dalton. I'm not sure that situation exists. So I think the fascinating thing would be, if and when the Bengals offer him in a trade to see what they might be able to get for him, I think that's a good question. I would be shocked if he is on the roster week one. I would be even more shocked if he was the starting quarterback week one. I think they're going to draft Joe Burrow with the idea that he's going to be the starting quarterback, and I think they would like to move on from Andy and try to get something in return for him.
Mo, if you're doing the Andy Dalton show after 9 years with the Bengals, what are you going to say about him that day?
I've always felt like you had the group of people who underestimated and underappreciated Andy and made him out to be this quarterback who had no merit, who was not very good. That's not the case. I think the best thing that happened to Andy Dalton's brand is they benched him and the guy who took over for him was terrible. And it kind of made you realize, oh yeah, this guy's not that bad. And that's accurate. He's not that bad. I think if we were to talk about the list of reasons why the Bengals have had 4 consecutive losing seasons, Andy Dalton's not at the top of that list. Now, you certainly wonder what if they would have drafted Patrick Mahomes? What if they would have drafted Lamar Jackson? And there were conversations about both of those things happening, and they obviously deferred to the guy that they had, but He has had a fine career. He is a really good dude, and he's a good quarterback in this league. He's probably not somebody you're going to win big with. He is certainly somebody that can provide some level of stability. And you could do a lot worse. Now, for the Bengals, though, they have a chance to get somebody who might be better, and obviously everybody here is really excited about that.
You've been tweeting about future Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. Last night on my show, You Bet, sports betting show on radio.com, we were talking about the Bengals taking Burrow number one overall, like everyone expects, and with Ravens regression. The Browns have the talent, but is Kevin Stefanski going to control that room with those characters? The Steelers, do they even have a quarterback going into 2020? I was making the argument that the Bengals could compete. I'm not saying compete for the division, but just be relevant again. Get close to the 500 mark with some of the talent on that roster. Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. That's not where I would put my money. I think that question is better answered in the middle of March. because for the Bengals to go from 2-14 to relevant, they're going to need some quick fixes. And, you know, obviously, every sign points to Burrow being the guy with the number one overall pick. This team has a lot of holes. Their defense has not been very good in a long time. If the idea is we're going to draft Joe Burrow and then hopefully some of the later round guys we get in the draft end up making, you know, an immediate impact, I would be very, very, very wary of that being a successful formula for a really good 2020. But if the idea is, look, we're about to have a quarterback under a rookie contract. We're going to have a little bit more financial flexibility. We're not going to have Andy Dalton, $17 million on the books. We've got to go make some instant upgrades. And that would involve the Bengals deciding, you know, really for the first time in their history, we're going to be proactive when it comes to free agency. They would have to overpay because which player with you know, choices is going to want to come to Cincinnati. But if they update their philosophy when it comes to how they built their roster, if they decide to get with the times and be aggressive in making upgrades to the team, you know, and then you draft Joe Burrow and, you do some things in the draft that address needs, yeah, you could sell me on this team flirting with 500.
That's where I'm at. What is happening with A.J. Green?
It's a great question. You know, A.J. Green quit on his teammates. He quit on his teammates. Now, I don't know that I blame him. He suffered the injury on the ankle injury on the first day of training camp. He had a toe injury last year, so he hasn't played a full game since October of 2018. They never put him on IR up until week 17. But, you know, there have been reports that A.J. Green hasn't exactly tried to refute that this was the plan all along, that once the season was, you know, sort of had sort of spiraled, you know, out of control where they simply had no chance of being relevant this year, that A.J. Green made the decision that he wasn't going to come back and play this year. And you certainly can't blame him, but he is a prideful guy. He certainly views himself as among the best wide receivers in football. He wants the kind of money that would be commensurate with that. He has one more year left on his contract, but he's going to be 32 years old, right around the beginning of training camp next year. He is obviously not played since October of 2018. He has said publicly that he doesn't want to be franchise tagged. He has also said that if he is franchise tagged, he's not going to not play, but he won't come to OTAs, and he'll show up for training camp only to the extent that he has to. So, you know, if you're the Bengals, you got some stuff to figure out. Can you trade him right now and get a lot for him? I'm guessing not. Can you franchise tag him and trade him? You know, again, I'm not really sure that you're going to get much in return. Can you really justify signing a guy who's about to be 32 years old to a long-term expensive deal who hasn't played in over a year? I'm not sure that's a good idea. But I also don't think you can do the whole charade that they just put themselves through again, which is we franchise tag him, but we don't trade him and we don't extend him. He basically is on the team. He's not happy about the franchise tag. And who knows what kind of player we're going to get. I'm not sure that that works out. So I think the idea is going to be to tag him and trade him. I just don't know that you get that much in return. The intriguing scenario for me would be if Tom Brady leaves New England and, you know, the Patriots aren't going to tank next year. They need wide receivers, and now they're going to need a quarterback. Can you franchise tag A.J. Green and go to Bill Belichick and say, look, I'll give you Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. Give us something of value. Now, would they be willing to do that because they don't have a number two, a second-round pick next year? I don't know. I think that's how you recoup the most value for both. But, yeah, aside from just the mechanics of drafting Joe Burrow, the most intriguing storyline involving this team revolves around A.J. Green and his contract status. I find it hard to believe they're just going to let him walk. I find it hard to believe that after the dance that they went through with him last year, that they're just going to let him up and go in free agency. And so outside of that, you've got a number of different scenarios that each have, I think, significant drawbacks, but also some upside if they pan out.
Mo, I want to hit on baseball before I let you go here. Cubs convention starts tomorrow, and for the first time in a while, Not much excitement at all. Now, I know there's excitement in your city about Cincinnati. The excitement here in Chicago is actually about the White Sox on the other side of town, believe it or not. Caesars posted their MLB win totals for the season. Four of the five teams in the NL Central above 500, they put Cincinnati at 83.5. What's the expectation for the Reds this season?
I think the expectation is right now a little unrealistic. You know, I think there's a difference between activity and results. And the Reds have achieved some results. I like the Mike Moustakas signing. It is not insignificant them signing their first Japanese-born player ever, Shogo Akiyama, who certainly looks like somebody who can get on base. The Wade Miley acquisition gives them, you know, kind of rounds out a really deep starting rotation. But this team did win just 75 games last year. And while they have a really good starting staff, I do wonder if they're going to repeat the same luck they had last year, because they didn't have a starter really miss any time a season ago. Mm. Their outfield is massively unproven. There's nobody that you could point to in the outfield that has had a full, you know, successful big league season. And Joey Votto is 36 years old and not getting any better. He had his worst season last year. I think they have a chance of being better, but we've talked so much about the possibility of them sending a package of prospects for a Francisco Lindor or a Corey Seager or someone like that. Those things tend to naturally create excitement, but they haven't actually happened. And so I think you have folks here who are excited about the fact that you're reading about the Reds getting guys who might transform this team, but they actually haven't gotten those guys yet. So I think there's reason to think this team can finish above 500. I believe they will. I'm kind of sitting on my hands when it comes to them versus the rest of the division. And, you know, look, there's the obvious, you know, elephant in the room when it comes to this division, where it feels like the Cardinals and the Cubs and the Brewers seem pretty uninterested in making their teams better.
Yeah.
It's really hard to leapfrog three teams, and I still feel like they're a piece away. The good news is I know they're pursuing that piece. I just don't know if they're going to get him. I don't know that as they're constructed right now that they have enough to win this division. But if they're able to go get a star, if they're able to go get a bat in the outfield, if they're able to go get somebody that you could look at and say is instantly the best player on the Reds, then suddenly all the supporting pieces look pretty good. And I think that's what this team is right now, a lot of kind of complementary pieces.
Yeah, wait until the Cubs end up trading Chris Bryant and the fan base freaks out, even though they know it's coming. That's interesting, because you were talking around 500. I felt that was the expectation. Cincinnati, such a great baseball city, so I know it means a lot that they are in the mix again. Are fans saying division, and hey, we've seen teams make wild card runs. You just have to get in the playoffs, and then you can make some sort of a deep run with this pitching. The Nationals just won a title with some great pitching. Are some fans just going a little too nuts here?
I think to a degree. Now, I'm with you that when you know, Dick Williams, the president of baseball operations, said at the end of last season, the idea was to build a playoff caliber roster in 2020. And look, this isn't the NBA where, you know, a playoff team, there's a difference between a playoff team and, you know, the Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Golden State Warriors. If you're a playoff team in Major League Baseball, you've got a shot. You know, there's such a dimension of randomness in the postseason. So, yeah, I think it's great that that's the stated goal. I kind of view them as having a 2, maybe 3-year window through which they've got a shot to contend. And yeah, I think you have, you know, there's always sort of a built-in optimism this time of year, especially when you're coming off so many down seasons, where you just kind of expect things to turn. And I understand that. And I certainly do believe that if this team overachieves a little bit, not by a lot, that we're talking about a possible playoff team. And I certainly don't think that it's going to take, you know, 99 wins to win the NL Central. I just think when you look at the team top to bottom, there's too many question marks as of right now. But again, they do have the prospect capital to pull off some major trades. The question is, do they have a team that's willing to deal a bona fide star to Cincinnati in exchange for the prospect capital that the Reds have?
Mo Egger, afternoon host, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Mo, it was fun. Let's do it again as we get closer to baseball, all right?
I look forward to it anytime.
Again, that's Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Does a great job over there.
And I'll go back to the start of the interview. If you didn't hear the entire thing, you're a Bears fan. It's got to excite you. So a guy that covered Bill Lazor for 3 years when he was there coaching, the number one thing, the first thing that came to mind when he talked about Bill Lazor and his time with the Bengals and Andy Dalton was he plays to the quarterback's strengths, calls plays that he's, I mean, that's what coaching is. And that seemed to be almost everyone's issue with Nagy last year. Why aren't you putting Trubisky and the rest of this offense in a position to succeed? Why do you feel that you need to win a certain way, score points in a certain manner? He's saying that's not what Bill Lazor is. And some other things that I've heard about his offense excite me. I want to talk about that on the other side and some of the other coaching changes that the Bears have made this week. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves will wear special military appreciation jerseys on January 18th and 19th that will be auctioned and raffled to help the USO honor flight and canines for veterans. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. The Joe O Show on the Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, a lot of changes to the Bears coaching staff, and they've focused on the offensive side of the ball for good reason. One of the worst offenses in the NFL. Every number will tell you that, and you have two eyeballs, and you saw it before your very eyes. The year you just needed Mitchell Trubisky to be an average quarterback, he was everything but, and the play calling absolutely atrocious. The Bears convinced themselves that they were just a kicker away. They may have been last year. But that was not the case this past season. So, as you know, Childress reportedly says that he's moving on. When Nagy was hired, hey, that was a big deal getting Childress, a guy with some experience in the room, among the coaches, on the offensive side of the ball. Now he's just leaving. But did it really help the offense much with Childress in the house? Not really. Harry Hiestand, anyone who's played for this guy, anyone who's coached with this guy, will tell you he's one of the best offensive line coaches around. So his firing, just it makes you think. I don't know that I'm confused about it because the offensive line was terrible, and the Bears evaluated those guys a year ago and said, yeah, let's hand out some contract extensions because we're going to have some consistency here. My guess would be there were issues behind the scenes and just philosophy. Because we all know Matt Nagy clearly has no interest in running the football or establishing the run at all. And I know that's not really a thing anymore. It doesn't seem to be. But you do still need to do that in this day and age. Certainly when you play in the NFC North, and you play a good amount of games in cities like Chicago and Green Bay. You have to run the football. And of course, Mark Helfrich, a bit of a scapegoat there, and he moves on. We just spent some time talking about Bill Lazor with Mo Egger in Cincinnati, his most recent job. Now, this will be Lazor's seventh team. Where did he coach in 2019? Nowhere. Wasn't coaching. Juan Castillo, he was on Bears All Access this evening. The guy's been in the game forever. Like, we're talking 40 years. And when you go over the resume, it's not the path that you would expect. He went from offensive line to defensive coordinator to running game coordinator to offensive line, and then another spot, offensive line and running game coordinator. So he's going to be the O-line coach replacing Heistand. Okay, fine. The John DeFilippo quarterback's coach is fascinating to me because just a couple of years ago, he was the hot name. Teams are saying, wow, look what he's been doing. Maybe, you know, we need an offensive guy. We need to find the next Sean McVay. Maybe there's a chance that he's that dude. He's 41. And this is going to be his 13th stop. In the last 7 years, this is going to be his sixth NFL team. Now, he's had some success with, you know, Minshew, a six-round quarterback in his rookie season this year. Nick Foles, he was there for Johnny Manziel. Josh McCown, too. I don't know what to expect out of DeFilippo because he's a mover. He just keeps going from team to team. I don't know that's a good thing. Is there personality conflict? Not sure. Dave Ragone, for some reason, the man is untouchable. You cannot mess with Dave Ragone. He's friends with Mitchell Trubisky, apparently. He gets a bit of a bump. He's up to the passing game coordinator. And if you've ripped Pat Shurmur, I wouldn't do that. If I'm Shurmur, I would say no thanks to the Bears and move on to the Broncos as well. And I know people are trying to look into it and saying, well, see, it's because Drew Locke's better than Mitchell Trubisky. Maybe. But just put yourself in those positions. See, these coaches coming to work with the Bears offense, to work with Matt Nagy. Is it going to be your offense? Nope. Matt Nagy's still calling the plays. It's his offense. He's collecting the plays. I know that it's not really much of an offense. He just collects a lot of plays from different guys. But you're coming in to help Nagy. You're not. Are you really going to be working with Trubisky as much? And maybe you don't think that he's going to be anything. At least Locke showed some promise near the end of last season. But Vic Fangio's the head coach still. You go to Denver, you're the offensive coordinator. That is your offense. You're not really answering to anyone. And that's what Vic is used to. Because what did he do in his last year in Chicago? He didn't answer to anyone. Okay, you run the defense. I'm going to run the offense. Okay, so you know if you're going to the Broncos that it's going to be your offense. Changes had to be made, but I'm a little concerned that you're bringing in a bunch of guys that were on the street last year. And this is what you're going to get with a young coach without a lot of connections around the league. I know Andy Reid and Andy, but this is kind of what you get. You don't have these lifelong relationships with guys that have been in the league 20, 40 years. Sure, you got Juan Castillo, but he didn't have a job. Lazor didn't have a job last year. Apparently, he was doing some consulting at the college level. I know he was doing that for Penn State a little bit. It'd be interesting. I think there's positives, but there's also some negatives that scare me. Like the negatives, we'll start there. As I mentioned, these guys were out of the game. And maybe that's a good thing. There is that chance because Dallas looked at McCarthy and viewed that as a good thing down the road. Able to sit back and just watch the league. Did you learn from your mistakes? Where's the game going? How should you adjust to this NFL? So there's a chance that it is a good thing, but it's still just a little bit concerning. Now, as far as Bill Lazor, I like what I've been hearing. analysts that know a lot more about his offense talk about him using tempo. When's Trubisky successful using tempo? 2 minute. You're a Bears fan. You're watching the game. Why isn't he always in 2 minute? Because right before halftime, near the end of regulation, he seems to move the football much more than he does in all the other possessions. Uses play action. He did that a lot with Andy Dalton. But the thing is, Nagy's still going to be calling the plays. The same guy that wasn't getting Trubisky on the move. We really don't know what sort of impact that Helfrich had with this offense. Adam Studzinski producing on the other side of the glass tonight. As a whole, when you look at Helfrich, he stand Childress out, Laser Castillo DeFilippo in. Is it neutral? Is it an upgrade? Is there room for hope?
I
don't know.
I'm rather neutral on it as a whole, mainly for the things that you've been saying about. Like, I like some of the things I'm hearing about Laser. You can also find bad things about, you know, you look at some of the numbers that offenses were producing that when he was there. And
they had a lot. He had a lot of talent there.
Yeah, he did. And the bigger point you were getting at is he's not going to be calling the plays unless Matt Nagy has made some decision, which he said himself we would never know about until it would probably come out like after the season. Like, oh yeah, Laser started calling the plays in like week 14 or something like that. So he's really going to be, it's seeming like more of a consultant, but maybe if, like, you got to think he's going to be in on helping design plays, right? That's what all the guys are here to do.
I think he was hired, hey, what you got?
Yeah.
What you got? What plays do you have
exactly
for us?
Exactly. And especially, and so if he's able to give them some plays and say, hey, this plays more to Mitch's strengths and we can get rid of some of these other things that, like, this doesn't work. Mitch can't do this. We can't do that. Like, you shouldn't have a lot of plays in the playbook that keep Mitch just standing in the pocket. You just shouldn't. Not right now. Based on what we saw last season, you can't.
Let me throw a potential negative at you, too, here. So, Nagy said at the end of the year to the media, he basically said Mitch is being overwhelmed, right? It's too much, too fast. It was supposed to be the big year, 101 to 202. That obviously failed. And I don't know if they're going to dial it back or they're going to bring it back to 101 when he was more successful. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they're going to handle this. But so Helfrich is gone. Childress is gone. I doubt he stand worked with Trubisky much. And then you bring in Laser, bring in DeFilippo. You keep Ragone. That's his guy. I mean, me, I don't know. As an outsider, I would say, yeah, great, cool. You guys are boys. You're friends. It ain't working. Like, you regressed in year three. So I don't know why he has to stay, but maybe they're worried about how Trubisky would react there. It just sounds like there's way too many voices. If you want to simplify things, why are you bringing different voices to get into this guy's head?
That's going to be something that we're going to probably, I don't know, have to keep an eye on. Like, how many, well, that's something we're never going to know, is how many people really deal with, like, are really working with Mitch. Like,
Ragone?
It sounds like Nagy and Mitch work hand in hand a lot together. That's what we got from Ryan Pace after the season. Guys, yeah. So Ragone has to be in that because he's the quarterback's coach. So you got to think there's at least two guys in his ears every week.
DeFilippo, so yeah. And Ragone's still going to be there. He's passing game coordinator. But DeFilippo, definitely. He's the position coach.
Well, yeah. If you're bringing him in to work with Mitch. That's why you're bringing him here. He's a quarterback's coach, right? Goes hand in hand. Like, he's obviously, he's here to do something with Mitch. He's here to be like, hey, maybe he's even just an outside guy. But hey, you've watched him from the outside. Fix this.
And the OC too, right?
Yeah.
The OC? You're bringing him to do the same thing.
So that might overwhelm him a little bit too much. It might.
They're adding voices.
At least he's got the whole offseason to deal with it now. So by the time you're into training camp, he's worked with these guys, and you're hopefully at that point you're just, well, that's what training camp should be. You should be just implementing plays, implementing your playbook.
I don't know what's going to happen. We're not allowed.
Who the hell knows?
We're not allowed.
No.
Does that bother you? I mean, you're from downstate a little bit.
Oh, the Bourbonnais thing?
Yeah.
We
all knew it was coming. We just didn't know it was the final season.
I'm disappointed from the fan perspective, because it was fun to go there.
Did you go every year?
I didn't go every year. But you know, I went enough. It was even fun from a media perspective to go down there. You get out of the city, you're down. It's like being on a college campus. It's different. It was a fun atmosphere. And so, and you know, the city of Bourbonnais was their great hosts. Like the whole city was all about the Bears for the whole time that they're there.
A lot of revenue.
And yeah, they're going to lose. I mean, they have on their water tower for the whole town to see the summer home of the Chicago Bears.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So like they're going to take that down, which sucks. And it's obviously now
going to be harder. Don Lenz is going to close up shop. No, I don't know about that. Like the Joe Madden restaurant.
Yeah. Well, and you're going to have to people from, you know, where I'm at. It's going to be a much harder drive to get up to Lake Forest now. You're losing that aspect. It's much harder for people to get there.
They put it in the press release, limited tickets for fans. Come on, dude.
We all know.
Very limited. Maybe season ticket holders, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So you don't quit.
The flip side is, I do know they have this like new state-of-the-art facility in Lake Forest. I do understand.
I get it.
That's definitely the better facility.
They're one of the few teams that was still doing this kind of stuff.
Just
to get away. And
that's what I think Hub was one of the first ones that pointed out. It's like most teams do this now. Yeah. Most teams have training camp at their own facilities. Players get to stay home now throughout training camp. They don't have to ship down to Bourbonnais, even though it's not that long of a drive anyway.
All their equipment, state of the art. If you're dealing with injuries, I mean,
so it's for the team, it's better. For the fans, it's worse, I think.
Way worse.
It definitely is. Especially
for the media, it's worse.
For the media, yeah. But you know, that's why I said even going as a media member was great.
And fans are driving around right now, studs, and they're yelling, "Joe, who cares about the media?" I'm just saying it.
We do.
We've been trending in this direction for a long time. I'm just saying it limits access, and the access is for the fans. So the fans will get less access unless they want to put more stuff on ChicagoBears.com, which they do a lot of nowadays. They actually do a good stuff with the social media. 312-644-6767. So with that said, I agree with you. I'm pretty much neutral on this. I don't see where there is a big upgrade, but maybe sometimes you just need some sort of a change. And there are things going on behind the scenes that we're not privy to. So, I mean, DeFilippo, according to his track record, he's going to be somewhere else next year anyways. So it'll probably be a one and done. But the concern I have is a bunch of guys not coaching in the NFL last year are going to be here this year, and you're adding more voices to the room. I don't know how involved Childress was with working with Trubisky, but yeah, now you're definitely adding more guys. Coming up next, Dan Pompey said a few interesting things about potentially the next Bear to go into the Hall of Fame. Yeah, it's Devin Hester. We'll talk about that next. Joe Osher, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Joe Ostrowski here. Congrats to Jimbo Covert, the latest 85 Bear to make it to the Hall of Fame. Covert, Dent, Hampton, Singletary. Want to throw Dicka in there as the head coach. Dick Stanfield as the O-line coach. All those guys representing the 85 Bears going into the Hall of Fame. So naturally, the conversation moves to, okay, who is the next Bear to make the Hall? And I think most of us land on Devin Hester. And as you know, Dan Pompey, Hall of Fame writer, he has a big part in this. Like, he sold Jimbo Covert to the committee, and he's done it with some other former Bears, like Dent, like Hampton, and Singletary. Here's Dan Pompey with Mullion Haugh on the challenges that they will be facing, and he'll be facing, when trying to get Devin Hester into the Hall.
I think he's got a strong case for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. However, the thing you have to realize with him, though, is that there's never been another player like him inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
There has never been a return specialist, mm-hmm. or you know, very few guys have made it in as special teamers at all. You know, kickers, punters, anything. So, you know, he's an outlier, and he'd be a first. So, there's always, you know, I think maybe some hesitancy when you've got a guy who doesn't fit the mold of other guys who've been in before him. I'll give you an example. Steve Tasker is a guy who we've discussed time and time again, mm-hmm. and I think is a very, very strong candidate as a special teams guy. Now, he wasn't so much a returner as much as he was, you know, a guy who was a coverage guy and a blocker and a guy who just made a lot of plays and really impacted games. He was the best special teams player in terms of, you know, not being a returner in NFL history, I think. But he has not been able to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I'm hoping that Hester will be viewed a little bit differently because of his role. You know, as a returner, you were able to really have a great impact on games. And I think, you know, that overcomes the fact that you don't touch the ball as a special teams guy, or you aren't on the field for as many plays as a special teams guy as an offensive player or a defensive player.
Of all the Bears that have not made the Hall of Fame yet, I think Hester has the best argument. Four-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro, 19 touchdowns, 14 on kickoffs, 5 on punts. Changed the game. They changed rules because of Devin Hester, and he's going to go down as the greatest ever at that position. It's not going the other way. Kicking is slowly being removed from the game. There aren't a lot of kick returns in games anymore. That's never going to change. But involved in 12% of plays, is it going to be enough? That's the biggest debate. Let's talk about that a little bit on the other side, because I hear other names thrown out, and I'm fans of these guys as players, but I don't know that they really have much of a case for the Hall of Fame. It's Hester and who? I'm not really sure. Also got a few other interesting notes about the Bears' changes on offense with the coaching staff. Some intel with some people that know the guys that are coming to Halas Hall to coach Mitchell Trubisky and the rest of this offense up. That's next. Joe Ostrowski with you. You've got the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.